Some of you are in love with people you've never met. They're on TV and you're just in love. You just stare at them. You think, I'm so in love with him. I'm so in love with her. I mean, you know, she reads the news and you're in love with her. You know, so it just doesn't. In fact, as we've already talked about, there are 1,500 organizations in this country, 1,500, that if you pay them your money and give them a profile, they will connect you with somebody with a similar profile. It is, and you may not believe this, it has never been easier to fall in love. It has never been easier to connect with a broader number of people because of media and because of social networking. It has never been easier to fall in love, but I would argue, and I bet you would agree, it's never been more difficult to stay in love. And yet that's what we want. And we somehow think it's possible. And we keep looking around thinking maybe we're going to find the one. Because there's something in you and there's something in me that wants to finish life and do life with that special someone. We don't want to just be in a relationship. We don't want to just survive the years. We want to be in love. But it's getting more and more difficult. And there's several reasons why it's so difficult. And none of this is new information. Part of it's what you saw growing up, right? Part of it's what you experienced. The truth is, very few people have ever been around a healthy, romantic, you know, marriage couple relationship. Most people have never seen one. I mean, seen one like tracked with it over a period of years, having grown up in a home where your parents, you know, were on the same page and had the kind of relationship you wanted to have one day. Very few people have ever even seen it. So consequently, what's modeled for us and the law of relationship and the rules of relationship are so wrong, and yet they're the very ones we adopt, that it makes it almost impossible for us to stay in love. I mean, here's what a lot of you, a lot of us grew up with: do unto others as they deserve to be done unto, right? Do unto others as they do unto you. Isn't that it? Do unto others as your mood would have it. Do unto others so as to get them to see things your way. Do unto others until you wear them down and get your way. Do unto others until you're ready to leave. I mean, as you think about the relationships you've tracked with either your friends in the office or your cousins or maybe even your parents, or, you know, when we look at relationships, you know, people may stay together, but they're not in love, you assume. They're not what you want. They're just kind of surviving if they even stay together at all. So consequently, because of what most of us see growing up, and what most of us have had modeled for us, I mean, we're just completely ill-equipped. We've never seen one. And yet, all of us think one's possible, and we think we're candidates for that kind of relationship. The other thing that makes it difficult is what we felt growing up. Now, a bunch of smart guys got together, men and women actually, and they came up with a list. This is kind of overwhelming. A list of what it takes for a child to grow up in a very, very nurturing environment and to leave adolescence and to be equipped to engage in healthy relationships in the future. In other words, here's what it would take to be fully emotionally, and in two weeks, we're going to talk about emotions specifically, so hang in there, to be emotionally equipped to engage in long-term relationship. Here's all it takes. You need to grow up in a home where you get respect, and this is like massive doses of all of this. Respect, encouragement, comfort, security, support, acceptance, approval, appreciation, attention, and affection. Sounds like the family you grew up in, doesn't it? You get constant respect, encouragement, comfort, security. Everybody's there, nobody's leaving. Support, acceptance, approval, appreciation, attention, and affection. Now, if that's what it takes over a long period of time to equip us to engage in long-term relationships as an adult, I mean, if that's what we felt, if that's what we need to have felt growing up, I mean, what are the odds of us being able to maintain a forever and happily ever after kind of relationship, especially when we connect with and meet people who didn't grow up getting that kind of stuff either? So consequently, what happens for most of us is we come into adulthood looking for someone from which we can get respect, encouragement, comfort, security, support, acceptance, approval, appreciation, attention, and affection. And I fall in love with you, but now that we're both in love with each other, I'm wondering, are you going to give me respect, encouragement, comfort, security, support, acceptance, approval, appreciation, attention, and affection, or are you just cute? Or do you just have a good job? Because once we're in love with each other, what begins as a hug around the neck becomes a stranglehold. Give me affection, comfort, security, love. You know, I got to have it. Because I came into this thing with a deficit. You know, I've been malnutritioned in terms of love and affection and all that stuff. And I'm going to squeeze it out of you. And you're going to squeeze it out of me. And I just wonder why I don't think you're so cute anymore. And that car, so what, you know? And all of a sudden, the things that just, you know, created this emotional energy where we couldn't stay away from each other, somehow it starts to go away. Part of what makes it so hard is what we have felt and haven't felt. And here's just a disturbing statistic. And this has been true for years. This is this year's statistic, but it's been this way for years. 40% of the children born in this country this year will be born into homes where there's no dad. 40%. There will be no stable male influence at all. 40%. Now, we can argue all day long about single moms and nurturing and all that stuff, and I'm not here to try to make a statement. I'm just telling you. If it takes all of that to equip someone to engage relationally and stay engaged relationally and be a healthy relationship, and 40% of the babies born in our country will never have a meaningful relationship with their father at all, I'm just telling you, they're gonna struggle. There's a deficit, and it's not their fault any more than it's probably your fault. But it's the reality. And yet, you're equipped to fall in love. But I think in terms of what's been modeled and what we have felt, many of us are not equipped to stay in love. And then there's another thing that makes this really, really difficult. Our culture, and you know this, none of this is new information, our culture has a really low threshold of pain relationally, a really low relational threshold for pain, of pain, which means it doesn't have to hurt too bad, and we just decide to get out, right? Gone are the days where I said I do, and I do means I do, and I'm going to keep doing whether I like it or not, and whether she or he likes it or not, we're just doing. We do. That's what we do. That day's gone, right? That it just doesn't take a lot of pain. And plus, in our culture, the message you and I get every single day, and maybe this, you think this is true, and you know, we can talk about that later. The message we get every single day is if you're not happy in your current relationship, it's because you're with the wrong person. You chose poorly. You need to re-choose. You need to reboot. You need to get out. You need to start over because you chose poorly. And if you'll just keep looking, you'll find that soulmate. And if you'll keep moving from relationship to relationship, eventually it's going to happen to you because you're finally going to meet the right person. But if you talk to people who've been married 20 years plus, who are still in love, and ask them about that approach, they will tell you there were times along the way these 20 years that I wondered if I had the right person. But I decided that the person I chose was going to be the right person. And we're so glad we worked through those difficulties. Because choosing the right person is part of it. But learning to be and to become the right person is the other part of it. And it's the part of it that we get no help for, from culture and from the world around us. Now, you know, so if we just stop there, odds are, you know, you may want to finish with somebody and you may want to stay in love forever. And you may want your current relationship to, you know, become more about in love than just surviving life. You may want it to be that way, but I'm telling you, the odds are against you. The odds are against me. It may be possible. It is not probable. Aren't you glad we don't close in prayer there? Send you home encouraged. Now, here's the thing. Look up here. This is so important, okay? This is so important. Into that chaos that all of us can relate to. I mean, we've all been dinged up and hurt and got stories, whether it's your parents or your previous marriage or you're watching one of your kids go through something. Into all of that chaos, Jesus speaks 2,000 years ago. 2,000 years ago, he's with his guys, and he gives us the foundation for enduring relationships. He gives us the foundation for enduring love relationships. I think it's the foundation for enduring romantic love, in love, can't wait to get home in the afternoon, can't wait to hear the garage door open, you know, kind of relationships. And it's so simple. It's so counterintuitive. It's so not a part of the way we normally think. It is a paradigm shift. It's it's readjusting north on your relational compass. But it's so simple that even when I say it, it's kind of like, ooh, yeah, I heard that before. Now give me something rich. Give me something practical. Andy, I've got her here. Now come on, work on her. Come on, she's here, buddy. This is your big chance, okay? She didn't want to come because she's, you know, but come on. I got him here, you know. He told me to bring the CD home. I'm bringing the CD home. So you got to, this is it, you know. We're hanging by a thread. I'm telling you, but again, don't take my word for it. Just find the people, if you can find them, who you look at their marriage and you go, that's where I want to be when I'm that age. That's what I want going on in my relationship next time I have one or in my current relationship. And here's what you're going to find. This is so simple. It's so powerful. It's so rare. It's so accessible. It's so available. If two people will simply accept this basic teaching of Jesus. This is in John chapter 13, verse 34. We're just looking at one verse from Jesus. And one more verse in just a minute. Here's what he says. He's got his guys together and he says, a new command I give you. Those guys, you got the Ten Commandments and you got 700 other, you know, Old Testament laws to support the Ten Commandments. I'm going to give you a new one. And when I tell you what it is, it's not even really that new. And the little Greek word for new can mean other things. And I'm wondering if maybe it means something else. Because the word can mean extraordinary. It can also mean hidden and recently discovered. It can mean remarkable. Maybe he's saying, I'm going to give you a remarkable command. It's so remarkable that you're going to be unimpressed, but if you sit on it for a while, you'll realize this is a remarkable command. And here's his command. Love one another. Oh, man, and you should have studied harder. Is that it? But listen to what Jesus does, and it'll slip right by you if you're not careful. Jesus takes a word that we normally use as a noun, and he makes it a verb. It's an imperative. It's a command. He says, look, guys, here's the deal. I want you to go and love one another. I know love is something you fall into like a pool and out of like a high chair. I mean, I realize love is like a noun, okay? But I'm making it a verb. I want you to love one another, which means Jesus would not have been a very good marriage counselor, probably, a relationship counselor, a couple counselor, because you'd have gone to him and said, she does this and she does that and she does this and she does that. And Jesus would look at you and say, well, are you loving her? Well, I used to. No, you don't used to. You used to noun. You don't used to verb. Are you loving her? Well, so here's what I want y'all to do. I'm gonna fix your relationship. I want y'all to go home and I want you to love each other. But we don't love each other. Well, you ought to. You're married. But we don't. No. You're confusing noun and verb. You're saying you're not feeling it. I want to help you feel it. You got to do it, and then you feel it. You see, your relationship started off feeling it, you know? And then the feeling went away, and you're trying to get the feeling back, and you're thinking the only way to get the feeling back is to meet somebody new, because let's see, when did I feel the most in love? Oh, when I met that new person. I think I'll go meet a new person to get the feeling back. Jesus says, no, here's how it works. If you want to maintain it, if you want to foster it, if you want to, you know, blow on that flame, then you need to quit treating love like a noun and you need to treat it like a verb. And I want you to go home and I want you to love one another. See, here's kind of the bottom line. This is just the beginning. We're 4 weeks going. Okay, this is just the beginning. The foundation for staying in love is to make love, pause, a verb. But now you'll remember it, right? Listen, in fact, let's just say that together because it's just fun to say in church, okay? Really, the foundation for long-term in-love relationship is making love a verb. You've got to make love a verb. And the goal isn't to recapture a feeling. Listen, in the relationship, the feeling is the caboose of the train. It ain't the engine. It starts off as the engine. I understand that. But then it goes to the back of the train. It becomes the caboose. In fact, I'll tell you something I'm not going to tell anybody else, and I don't want this to leave the room, okay? The more you make love a verb, the more you'll make love. But you didn't hear that from me, okay? Now, here's what he says. He says, I want you to learn how to actively love one another. Love is something you do. And when two people who at some point have been in love or are in love, and we're going to talk for 4 weeks, so don't say, hey, tell me what to do. We're going to get there. When they actively love one another, guess what it does? It rekindles and continues to kindle and inflame and enrich and make better the in love part of the relationship. But you have to love one another. It's a command, love one another. But he doesn't stop there. And maybe this is the new part of the command. Listen to the rest of the verse. New command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. In other words, he says, I don't want you to take your cue from culture. Although there's some things that can be redeemed from culture relationally, it's not all bad. I don't want you to necessarily take your cue from your parents. I mean, they may have survived, but if you look at their relationship and they just, you know, finally dad moved upstairs and they got two kitchens and they're in the same house, but I mean, he'd rather go on vacation with, you know, the dog than take your mom. And, you know, they're together, but it's not what you want. It's going, maybe you don't need to take your cue from your parents about what it means to love one another. And maybe you shouldn't take your cue from your, you know, your parents-in-law or your fiance's parents or, you know, this person you're in love with's parents. I mean, I don't know where you take your cues from, but Jesus says, for sure. When you think about what does it mean to love like a verb, I want you to take your cue from me. And if you'll allow me to, I will teach you how to love. Not how to be in love. You've got a pulse. You're good. I want to teach you how to stay in love. But if it's going to happen, love must be a verb, not just a noun. To stay in love, you've got to make love a verb. Now, okay, with you, tracking with you. Later on, years later, the Apostle Paul comes along, takes the same idea and says it in a different way, except he uses a bad word. I mean, this is bad words, a word we don't like. He uses a word that's actually gotten Christians in a lot of trouble, but it's unnecessary because the word is so offensive that we kind of discount everything he says about this. But the Apostle Paul takes the very idea Jesus said, and he just uses a different word than love, and it's a word that sticks a little harder and is a little bit more of a, I don't know about that. But I'm telling you, it's the very same thing, and it's an extraordinarily powerful word that helps illustrate what Jesus meant when he said love one another. Here's how the Apostle Paul said it. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 21. Just going to look at this verse. Ephesians 5, 21. Here's what he said. Here starts off with the bad word. Submit to one another. And then here's the Jesus part again. Out of reverence for Christ. Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. You know what that means? It's the same as love one another, except it just got a barb on it. And here's what it means. Paul said, and then right after this, we're not going to look at it today. Right after this, Paul begins to talk about men and women's relationship and husbands and wives. He goes right into it. He says the bottom line, the foundation, the starting block for people who are going to stay in love is mutual submission. Mutual submission. Mutual submission means I say, you know what? In our relationship, you're the priority. And you say, no, Andy, in our relationship, you're the priority. I go, no. In our relationship, you're the priority. No, Gomer, you know, you're the priority. No, Luann, you know, you're the priority. In other words, the big conflict in the relationship is who's going to be first, who's going to take priority. And, you know, I'm saying it's you and you're saying it's me. That's mutual submission. Let me just tell you, I don't know if you've ever seen that in a marriage. I don't know if you've ever seen that between a man and a woman or between people in love. But I want to tell you something. When you see it, it's powerful. It is rare because it's scary because somebody has to go first. Somebody has to say, you know what? You're the priority in this relationship. And even if you don't make me the priority, I'm making you the priority in the relationship. When two people get that going on, I'm telling you, love is alive and well in that relationship. It's so rare. Very few of us listening to this message have ever seen it. But when you see it, you go, that is what I want. Paul says, this is what Jesus was talking about. Mutual submission. You first. Now, you may never go in the building because you'll be holding the door for the rest of your life, but it's okay. You first. Now, we're gonna talk about this a lot in the next few weeks. But that's the beginning. That's the foundation. Love actively, verb one another. Specifically, submit. Submit means you place yourself under the other person, not because by birth order or by, you know, financial status or, you know, some other caste system, you're not as important. That's not it at all, as we're going to see next week. It's a choice you make. It's a choice you make. It's a decision you make, regardless of who I am and what I had and what I brought into the marriage and who I'm related to and whatever else. I am choosing to place myself under you as you choose to place yourself under me. You say, Andy, that doesn't even make sense. I know it doesn't really make sense, but I'm telling you what, when you experience it, when you see it, when you watch one of those, when you get into one of those, that's the foundation for staying in love. Not simply staying married, staying in love.
It's good teaching, huh? Yeah. We're going to come back and watch a second session in just a few minutes, as we've just gone through. First of all, that love is a verb, not a noun. But before we come back to the second session, we're going to take about a 10-minute break here. There are coffee and snacks in the back. If you want to grab a cup of coffee, if there's someone here that you look across the way and you've never met them before, I want you to make it your goal to talk to at least one person that you haven't had a conversation with yet. We'll take about a 10-minute break here for coffee, and then there'll be a video just to cue you when we're going to come back and watch the next session.
Here's what it looks like. Here's what it looks like to love the way that Jesus loved us. And so he gives some instructions to these Christians and to us, and they're general instructions about all relationships. But what I want us to do in our few minutes together today is I want us to look at these verses through the lens and through the filter of that one-on-one love relationship that you either hope to have, are in, or trying to patch up and repair, or, you know, hope, you know, that you're on the verge of you know, formalizing through marriage. That we're going to look at these verses through the lens of that, not everybody, not just the general one another, but that one another, the person that you're in love with or hope to fall in love with someday. Listen to what he says. Philippians 2, verse 3. Here's how it begins. He says, and in fact, we could just stop with this one. He says, do nothing, and nothing means no thing. Do nothing out of selfish or motivated by selfish ambition or vain conceit. So in this relationship, in this love relationship, just don't do anything out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. And the little phrase selfish ambition actually carries the idea of competitiveness or compete with. So essentially he's saying, look, if you want to stay in love, if you want a healthy relationship, don't compete with each other. Don't compete. In other words, when she's telling that story and she gets some of the details wrong, don't interrupt her and say, no, it was red, honey. No, there were three of us. No, it didn't happen. It was Friday. What? It's just like, just let her tell the story wrong. Don't compete. Don't compete with him. Whatever there is that you have unnecessarily because you're feeling a little insecure or whatever your issue is, he says, look, don't just remove all that. Just remove all that. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or in a competitive spirit, but rather, or vain conceit. And then he goes on and he gives us the opposite. And this next phrase is the point of the message. This next phrase is the idea that he carries throughout the passage. This next phrase is the one where we want to say, I just don't think I can do that. I'll be taken advantage of. I will if you will, but I'm not going first. It's too risky. But here is the heart of what it means to be and stay in love and to love another person. But rather in humility, or literally in humility of mind, he's talking about an attitude. He's talking about a decision. This is an interior, internal thing that, you know, I'm going to live out in my life. Rather in humility, value others above yourself. Value others above yourself. Value others above yourself. Literally, act like he is more important than you. Make decisions as if you really believe she is more important than you. Have you ever been around somebody that's more important than you? You have. Let me go ahead and tell you where. I mean, we're like, and here's the pushback. It's like, no, wait a minute. Are you talking about that there are some human beings who have greater intrinsic value than other human beings? Nope, that's not the point of this passage. He's saying, I want you to think about a time in your life you are around someone who in that particular context was more important than you. For example, have you ever been to a wedding when you weren't the bride or groom? Did you notice how people stood in line for hours to talk to them and not to you? Do you remember how no one stood in line to talk to you and everybody stood? Because in that particular context, I hate to break it to you, you were not the most important person in the room. Did you notice that when the bride walked in, everybody stood? When you walked in, no one noticed? Because in that particular context, you were not the most important person in the room. We've all been in rooms and places. If you've ever been invited to your boss's house for dinner and he and his wife hosted a little dinner party and you were there, you weren't the most important person in the room, were you? Have you ever been in the presence of a national hero or somebody who's done some extraordinary thing, and when you hear their story, you're just so humbled and you think, how did they endure that? How did they do that? Why were they so selfless? And you're in their presence and their autograph in your book, or you just happen to meet them somewhere and you don't even know what to say. In fact, you say a bunch of stupid stuff that you wish you hadn't said later on when you thought about it, but you're just in the presence of someone who in that moment, they really are more important than you. You would even say in that moment, this is a great person. I'm just honored to be in their presence. Now, with all that in mind, how do you treat someone like that? Let me tell you how you treat them. You defer to them. You defer to them. You don't interrupt them and say, no, I think that was blue, not red. Go ahead. I'll listen. Oh, no. You don't pat them on the back and say, posture. Oh, yeah. Okay. You don't do any of that. You don't correct them. You laugh even when they're not funny, you know? You defer to them because in that moment, the key is respect. I'm going to treat you as if you are more important than me. I'm going to treat you as if you have more value than me. Not in the realm of all humanity and are some humans better? No, we're not talking about that. We're talking about in the moment, you defer to them. You show them respect. No matter what that means, you offer through your activity, through what you say, through what you don't say, through the way you say it, you respect them because you treat them as if they, in that moment, are more important than you. Paul says that's how you treat other people. And specifically, that's how you treat the person you're in love with if you want them to stay in love with you and you with them. That's how you treat your husband. That's how you treat your wife. That's how you treat that special someone. Every single day, every single decision, every day, all the time, you respond as if you believe they are more valuable, more important than you. You say, wait, Andy, I think they'll take advantage of that. Well, they might. Well, Andy, I don't really know if that's going to come back my way. It may not. That's none of your business, actually. This is how you are to treat them. Think about it this way. Think about your most valued possession. Your most valued possession. How do you treat your most valued possession? Well, you're careful about how other people treat it, aren't you? You're protective. You keep it clean, shiny. You know where it is. You know, you go, yeah, I keep it in my garage. Are you suggesting I keep her? No, that's not that. It's just you think about how you value and protect and take care of your most valued possession. You treat it differently. You treat it consistently. It's special. There's a sense in which it's like you treat it with a little bit of awe. And God's saying, Paul's saying, people who've done this for a while are saying, you know what? That's how you treat that special someone in your life, with a sense of awe. Like, awe. Now, we don't do that, do we? That's how you fall out of love. But you know, when you first met, you did that a little bit, didn't you? It was just like, awe. Have you met her? Awe. He called, awe, you know? Have you seen her? You know, it's like there was a sense of this was. Oh, I don't want to mess this up. I don't want to handle it too roughly. This is precious. This is tender. This is fragile. This is my undivided attention. So you know how to do this. And in the beginning, it's so much emotion and so much passion. It comes in a little bit naturally. People who stay in love, they just keep doing that. They learn how to take what at first came naturally and they learn to do it intentionally. Every single day, every single opportunity. They treat that person as if they really are more important. That is, they decide you come first. And I'm telling you, if you've never seen it, never experienced it, when two people come together and they both decide to do that, that's what we talked about last week, mutual submission. You first, no, you first. No, you need to go first, you're more important to me. No, you first, you're more important. When you see two people come together like that and love and respect and value each other like that, it is a powerful, powerful thing. That's who people who fell in stay there. That's how they generate it. That's how they nurture it. I'm telling you, that's how it gets deeper. That's how it gets better. That's how it gets richer. And there are bumps and there's kids and there's physical things and financial things and circumstance. I mean, there's all of life. But in every opportunity, they go, oh, you know, I, You are of greater, I'm treating you as if you have greater value than me. It's a decision you make. It's a verb you do. It's a lifestyle you develop. And when two people do that, it's absolutely unbelievable. Value her. Value him. Treat with value above yourself. Now, if that wasn't enough, he goes on to elaborate even more. Verse 4, same sentence, same idea. Not looking to your own interest, but each of you to the interest of others, or to the interest of the other. That is, not looking to your own interest, but to the interest of the other. Now, this is hard for me. I'll tell you why. Because, and maybe you can identify with this. I'm mostly interested in the things that interest me. Let me go over that again. See, I naturally am mostly interested in the things that interest me. And I'm not naturally interested in the things that aren't interesting to me. Did you follow that? And you are the same way. Which means, left to my own, I gravitate emotionally and physically and with my time and my money toward the things that interest me. And if the things that interest me aren't the things that interest the person I'm in love with, then we got a little problem there. And Paul says, here's what you do. You, as a decision, very intentionally express and learn to express interest in the things that interest the person you want to stay in love with. Now, I have a little test right now going on in my life, because for years, Sandra has wanted to have a garden and I've not wanted us to have a garden. And we've never argued over this. I've just not made any, you know, effort to help her have a garden. She'll talk about it for a while and I just hope it goes away and then she'll get busy. We got, you know, and just, we've just never had it. So finally, she just, you know, she went out and now we have a garden. And I was for it. I didn't say we can't have a garden. But see, I'm not interested in a garden. And part of it is this, and this is just being honest. Part of it is, I know the things that she's going to grow in the garden are not things I want to eat. I discovered, when I thought we were going down this road, coffee beans grow on trees, and we're in the wrong climate. So why would we want to have a garden if we can't even grow coffee? What are we going to... So there's just nothing about the dirt. And plus, here's the other thing. See, if she carves off some of her spare time, which she doesn't have a lot of, and invested in the garden, guess who doesn't get that time? So I don't know about the garden. I mean, it's not even that I'm not interested. It's that it might interfere with, you know, her priority, right? Who she's supposed to be loving, right? I mean, this plus nothing simple. You know, it's just going to be little. Then who knows the next thing? And we've got like green machinery. I mean, I don't know where this goes. And all of a sudden, I'm feeling a little threatened. And I'm feeling a little bit left out. And I don't want to eat any of that stuff anyway. So then I have a decision to make. Am I going to love me? Am I going to talk her out of that? Am I just going to ignore it and hope it goes away? When there's a problem, am I going to go, it's your garden. You know, I'll be over here reading the Bible. You know, you'd be out there doing the garden, you know. So I got a decision to make. Now, this is a pretty simple one. I'm not going to tell you the more complex ones. I just, you know, just, this is just an illustration. But you know what? There's like, it's like, I have a decision to make. And the decision isn't, do I like gardening? The decision isn't, am I going to eat those vegetables? It's bigger than that. The issue is, am I going to look to her interest or only mine? And I asked her if I could use this as an illustration. She said, yeah, because then you'll be accountable. But it's that. Am I going to put up with? Am I just going to listen with one ear to your interest because they're not my interest? Or am I going to discover what you're interested in and then move in that direction? That's what you do when you want to stay in love. You don't put up with their interest. You find a way to become interested and express interest in what they're interested in. It's so funny to me sometimes when I ask women what their husbands do. And, you know, every once in a while I get these answers. Like one time I asked a lady, I said, what does your husband do? She says, it has something to do with wires. That was it. I'm like, she didn't even tell me the name of the company. It has something to do with wires. I said, really? And that's about all she knew. And they've been married a long time. I'm like, that's all you know about it has something to, I'm thinking, okay, you need to at least have a better answer than that. That was awful, right? Again, how, you want to stay in love? You learn to get out of your comfort zone a little bit and you learn to express interest in the interest of the person you're in love with. Now, you know what's interesting? You know how to do this. You know how I know? You know how to do this because when you fell in love, you found out what they were into and suddenly, temporarily, you were into it. Oh, I love to run. You'd never run in your life. Oh, I'm a runner. I run. Oh, yeah, I run. And you went to your friend and said, do you have any running shoes that look used? I cannot go out there with like brand new. It's like all of a sudden you're a runner, right? I love to fish. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Fish. Dad, fishing. Give me a, you know. I mean, right? We do that. Love to meet your parents. Where do they live? It's like, you know, we do that. See, we know how. But then once we're in, we forget that we have to stay there. But you want to go deep? You want to stay deep? You want there to be real intimacy? Then you do this. You decide, you live as if they're more important than you, which means their interests become at least as important as your interests. Now, see, all that's so ideal, and maybe you're going, yeah, in some other world, you know, some other generation, and you want to just discount that. Now, if you're not a Christian, or you're not sure yet, or you kind of, the whole Jesus thing, you're not sure about, or you had a bad experience in church, at this point, we kind of go in two different directions, but I'm so glad you're here to hear what we're about to say, because at this point, Paul kind of reads our mind. It's like he's saying, I bet they're reading this going, nobody does that. That is so extreme. Who's going to do that? And so he takes us now to the part where Jesus said, love one another as I have loved you. And Paul says, let me kind of illustrate the way that Jesus loved you, because that's the model. It's not the way your mama loved you or your daddy loved your mama or your grandparents loved each other, though again, they may have been great illustrations. He said, here's what it looks like. Here's the model. Verse 5. In your relationships with one another, and we're talking about that one another, that special one another. In your relationships with one another, have the same attitude. So have the same attitude of mind Christ Jesus had. In other words, he says, I want you to approach your relationship with the person you're in love with the way that Christ Jesus approached his relationship with you. Same perspective. This is a command. Verse 6. Who, talking about Jesus now, who, being in very nature God, like he was God, like everywhere Jesus went, he was God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. This is huge. See, you show up in the relationship and you think, well, I'm at least 50% of this thing. I at least should get 50% of the attention. Like, I'm at least as good as him. I'm at least as good as her. I'm at least as important as him or her. So I have certain rights I can demand and certain things I should get out of this, you know, kind of thing. And Paul says, okay, let me tell you what the model is. Here's Jesus, who was in very nature God, and yet not one single time in his earthly ministry did he push the I'm God button. Hey, could y'all slide over? We'd like to have those seats. I'm here with my guys. I'm Jesus. Yeah, you guys slide over. We want the front row. We'd like that table. I'm Jesus. Okay, Jesus. Okay, right. Okay, so we don't even need to order food, but we're here to help you out. So we want that table. Right. Never in his whole ministry did he leverage who he was for his own sake. See, I'm tempted to do this all the time. You're tempted to do that all the time, right? Because you were there first, and don't they know who you are? And, you know, didn't you bring all the income into the family? And, you know, I've raised those kids, and I birthed those kids. You know, we all got leverage points because of who we are and what we've done. Paul says, okay, I want you to follow Jesus, and here's what Jesus did. He was more important than everybody else in the room. Every time he showed up in the room, he was the bride. Every time he showed up in the room, he was the hero. Every time he showed up in the room, he was the celebrity. He was the rock star. He was the writer. He was the singer. He was the business guru. He was the owner of the company. Every time he showed up in the room, he was the most important person in the room, and he never leveraged that for his sake. That's the model. Whoo, he goes on. Verse 7. Rather, he made himself nothing. Literally, in other translations, it says he emptied himself. Everything he had come into him, you know, rightfully, all his rights, all the respect that he was owed, you know, all the attention due him, he emptied himself of all of that. He emptied himself. He emptied himself. You know what we say in our culture? She's full of herself. He's full of himself. 2,000 years ago, Paul wrote, he emptied himself. That's the model. He made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant. Being made in human likeness. And he didn't have to do any of that. And why did he do all of that? What was he up to? What was the point of that? Nobody made him do that. Verse 8. And being found in appearance as a human being, check this out, he humbled himself. He made a decision. This is a verb. He humbled himself. Nobody else humbled him. He decided to place himself under. He decided to submit. He decided to subordinate his will. He decided to humble himself. And guess who he humbled himself to? You and me. He humbled himself by, in other words, what did this look like? What did he do? Did he start coming home earlier for dinner? No, it was bigger than that. Did he start paying attention during the conversations? No, it's bigger than that. Did he start doing a better job staying on the budget so as to cause less problem and friction in the marriage? No, it was even bigger than that. Did he pick up the kids from school without even being asked? No, it was even bigger than that. What did he do to demonstrate that he was placing himself under, that he was humbling himself in order to maintain and, you know, create this new relationship with mankind? By becoming obedient to death, even death, on a cross.
I'm just going to read that portion that we just read out of Philippians there. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. In your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus, who, being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. What a great reminder how we are to live and treat one another. The ultimate example that we have in Christ. I'm going to ask if you'll stand with me as we close together this morning. And I don't know where you're at. I don't know the marriages that are represented here specifically today. But perhaps something hit home just in as we were watching the video and what he was teaching there. Maybe there's something that God's impressing on your heart that you need to start to apply in your relationship. It's not about us getting what we deserve, but it's we are called to love, a verb, one another. We are called to treat the other as being more value than ourselves, just as Christ did for us. So I just want to pray for us as a church community and specifically the relationships that are represented here today, and if you'll join me. Heavenly Father, thank you that you are our example of love. Lord, for those of us who maybe have failed in this regard, we recognize that this is not the way that we've treated our spouse, our significant other. Lord, I just pray, can you teach us to know what it is to love? Thank you for Jesus, who came to earth, not for his own benefit, but he who deserved all glory and honor came humbly as a servant, was mocked, was rejected, and died on a cross because he loved so greatly. Can you teach us how to love one another? I pray for the marriages that are represented here today. Lord, I ask, Holy Spirit, would you be present in our relationships? Would you teach us how to love? Perhaps some of us even coming this morning and knowing it was going to be a message on marriage maybe even came with a bit of a chip on our shoulder about how our spouse needed to hear this, how they needed to learn. Lord, can you convict us again? Lord, on how we can love better. May that be represented in the homes of each and every family that belongs here at ECC. And I pray that we can see a transformation in our community of Beaumont. Lord, for the broken relationships that have bought into what culture has sold, that it's about me pleasure. It's about jumping around to what makes me feel good. God, can you teach us? Can you fuel us to have strong marriages that last? Lord, that we don't just know how to fall in love, but to stay in love. Keep us strong so that we can follow that commandment, that what seemed such a simple commandment, to love one another. Just ask that you would be with each one. Strengthen this week, I pray. In Jesus' name, amen. Just before you go this morning, just two quick reminders. One is, if you have not yet signed up for Right Now Media and would like to, there are two other sessions that go with this teaching by Andy Stanley. I encourage you, families, watch this at home, husbands and wives, watch this together this week online. If you haven't filled one out yet, again, just on a communication card, just write Right Now Media. Just before you go, Pastor Jeff is putting on a seminar today. He's just going to quickly mention a word on that.